And now, Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Move the Sticks. DJ Bucky here with you. Buck, how you doing, man?
I'm good, man. I can't complain. How's everything your way?
Oh, everything is good. The Padres are making moves. We're winning games. We're not going to catch the Dodgers, but we're going to go to the playoffs, and we'll take care of them when we get to the playoffs, Buck. So that's it's all good, man. And we got football. We got a college football game the other day. We've got more college football coming up this week. Did you watch it, by the way?
I did watch it after I watched a slew of high school games and everything else, and I'm amazed at everything that's going. But I think we just kind of have to get comfortable and just hope that everything turns out for the best. But it was great to see football, high school and college, and to know that, man, we're 10, 11 days away from NFL kicking off. Yeah, it's right around the corner. I'm excited to see what it looks like.
And I had a chance to go out to SoFi Stadium to see where the Rams and Chargers are going to be playing this year, and it is unbelievable, man. Buck, you are not going to believe this place. It is like Disneyland if you love football. It is awesome. So that was a lot of fun, and I'm ready for this NFL season to get kicked off. Which leads me to a really cool new podcast that's coming up. We're going to get to in a minute, called Huddle and Flow. It's with our buddies Jim Trotter and Steve Weich. They're going to come on and preview a little bit of what this new podcast is going to be like. So that you're going to want to stick around for that conversation. Really fascinating stuff. But before we get to them, I wanted to get your thoughts on what's going down in Jacksonville as another first round pick has been jettisoned there.
Yeah, so it's not only Leonard Fournette being jettisoned, but it's the trade with Yannick Ngakoue going to the Minnesota Vikings. And, you know, DJ, is tough because from a philosophical standpoint, I think you and I both come from the school of you draft, develop, re-sign, and that's how you build your team for long-term success. And when you look at the Jacksonville Jaguars, unfortunately for them, they haven't been able to stick to it. Looking at the numbers, 2017, that defense, which was Saxonville, a dominant defense, six Pro Bowlers on that team. None of those guys remain. Jalen Ramsey, Calais Campbell, Telvin Smith, A.J. Bouye, all gone, all out the building. Malik Jackson. So you just wonder what went wrong. Why did it go wrong so quickly in Jacksonville? And can that staff find players in the draft and quickly rebuild to make them contenders in a very short period? It is hard to do. We know the challenges of getting it right in the draft, but now you're having to get it right. And we can talk about the plethora of picks, but you and I talk about this. Turning picks into players is a hard proposition. Can you do it? And can you do it quickly to get this team back to being very competitive?
All right. Let me just pose this question to you. If Blake Bortles hits, are all these guys still on the team?
Yes. And because, like, it's unfortunate, right? So here's the thing. Blake Bortles, and you liked him enough where you were willing to bypass in the draft with Leonard Fournette, you're willing to bypass Deshaun Watson and Pat Mahomes. And so your ability to believe in Blake Bortles prevented you from getting maybe an A-level quarterback that would have helped the franchise get up and going. So people will point to Leonard Fournette, but if Blake Bortles plays well, then it lessens the impact of Leonard Fournette either being what he was supposed to be or not being what you thought he was going to be, because a quarterback, an elite quarterback, can make amends for all of those things. And so really it kind of comes down to that. When you miss on the quarterback and you fail to acknowledge that you missed on the quarterback, it prevents you from moving on. The best decision makers, look, man, hey, we messed it up. We're going to move on. We're going to cut our losses, and we'll just start over. But, man, to try and re-sign and justify, it might have hurt the Jacksonville Jaguars thinking that they had something to Blake Bortles that they obviously was not.
You know who's thankful for that? A lot of people will point to the fact, and they'll say, oh, you know, I guarantee you who's thankful. It's the Texans and the Chiefs, because they're able to get those two quarterbacks because Jacksonville didn't take them. I'll tell you who's sneaky thankful for the way things went down in Jacksonville. You know who that is? It's the Arizona Cardinals. Because if you fast forward, the Arizona Cardinals had taken a quarterback in Josh Rosen that I bet you if you gave him truth serum, they had said, I don't think this is not what we thought we were getting here. But do they hold on to their draft grades? Do they hold on to where they picked them? No, they immediately turn the page and say, Kyler Murray's much better than what we have here. So we're not going to debate whether, you know, we talk about trucks and trailers, right? They could have easily said, okay, maybe we thought – Josh Rosen was a truck that could pull the team. It turns out he's a trailer that needs the team to pull him, but we can still win with him. And now we have an opportunity with this pick. We can take Bosa. You know, obviously is probably the best pass rusher in the NFL right now. Nothing, you know, that could be a strong case, but they resisted that and said, man, if you have a trailer at the quarterback position and there is a truck that is available, sorry, trailer's got to go. We got to get the truck and then we go from there.
You know, and for so long, DJ, we hadn't treated the quarterback position like that. Like, we kind of treated those guys with kid gloves. You took one, A, you don't want to bring somebody in and to make the starting quarterback feel uncomfortable. And I think now more than ever, teams are more ready. They're ready to move on if they have an opportunity to get better, particularly when guys are on rookie contracts. And we've talked about the Super Bowl window is when the young quarterback comes in the building on that 4 or 5 year rookie deal where you can build everything around them. And so, yeah, I do believe people were able to learn lessons from the way the Blake Bortles experiment played out. And I think they added accordingly because they didn't want to hamstring themselves with a quarterback where you're like, I just don't know if this guy can ever be what we want him to be.
Yeah, it's amazing. We've talked about forever kind of the impact of, man, if you can hit, if you get it right, if you get the quarterback right, man, everything else a little bit better. Everything, the air smells a little bit cleaner. You know what I mean? Like everything, it just takes away everything. We used to talk about like it's Febreze, right? Any kind of smelly issues you might have, just that's this little Febreze there with your quarterback. But man, if you miss, it impacts in a lot of different ways.
It does impact in a lot of different ways. Let's talk about the pass rusher, Yannick Ngakoue. Yeah. They moved him on, so they now they got a second round pick,
second and a conditional five that I guess could turn to a three. Yeah.
So now in the first three rounds of next year's draft, they have six picks, two in each round, two firsts, two seconds, two thirds. Like DJ, what do you think? Like, because we've seen teams like the Miami Dolphins loaded with all this draft capital or whatever. What do you think about having that much capital, and how do you think the best way for them to parlay those picks into players that can make an immediate difference as they try and rebuild this team?
Well, I mean, this year for the Jags, forget wins and losses. There's one goal this year. That's to evaluate Gardner Minshew and find out what you have there, you know, because, hey, we've seen the best quarterback in NFL history was a 6th-round pick. So don't worry about where he was picked. If he shows you some things, they've still got a lot of speed and skill on the outside of this team. I think he's got a chance to have a successful year. The offensive line is really not that bad. So if Minshew can prove that he's that guy, man, now you're in a pretty good spot because now you have all this draft capital to be able to surround him with help. There's some good young pieces on defense, some speed there. They've got impact players at all three levels. As crazy as it sounds, even all jettisoning all these guys, if they can just be solid, and in other words, don't miss on these guys. You don't have to hit home runs, but just, you know, even if you're just getting solid doubles with all these picks, those six picks you just mentioned, Buck, they can add six quality starters over the next 2 years. I actually think if Minshew's the guy, they could turn this thing around pretty quick.
That would be the best scenario. The best scenario for the Jacksonville Jaguars is if Gardner Minshew is an A1 quarterback, a starting quarterback that you can build around. Because I believe it is a lot easier to find the complementary pieces than to find the quarterback. I think it's easier to find pass catchers and runners and people on defense that can make plays. But if he's not the guy, now you have to make a decision on which of these quarterbacks in the 2021 class is the guy and which one is the best fit for how you envision your team playing the next 5 years. And so we'll talk about the guys, and we don't know if these are the three, but Trevor Lawrence, Justin Fields, Trey Lance. Yep. Which of those guys is the best fit for what you want in your locker room as a leader and as a player? The other thing that you have to make a decision on is, even if Gardner Minshew is great, how great is he? Is he a high-end?
Is he great enough to pass up one of these three guys?
Is he a high-end trailer, like we talked about in Arizona when they had to make a decision on Josh Rosen? Or is he a guy that we're like, look, he's a low-end truck. We can get it done with him. That is the challenge, because now you're evaluating Trevor
Lawrence. You'd be scared to repeat the same mistake. You could be positioned to repeat the same mistake, man. That's what's scary. Yeah, I don't know, man. That's going to be interesting. By the way, real quick, we weren't planning on talking about this, but Trey Lance, the one game exhibition season. To me, it reminds me of Apollo Creed and Ivan Drago. It's just, this was supposed to be an exhibition. You can't hit him. You can't hit me. Central Arkansas, are you serious right now? You're not allowed to hit me. I'm Trey Lance.
Yeah. You know, I don't know, DJ, like a one game audition. Like, what do we really make of that? What does he really have to gain from a one game audition in the fall?
I just think it's just that it's a chance to just get your eyes on him, see if he's, gotten any bigger, stronger, moving around. I'm comfortable. To me, one game, extra game is not going to do it for me. But I will say this. I think it's smart from his standpoint. When you look at how long this run up could be for the draft, I think that game is it early October? I think it's when it's scheduled. So if you can get a month worth of 7-on-7 and teamwork and throwing 1-on-1s, that's a month worth of real football in shoulder pads with opponents that's going to be better than what you're going to get if you're going to train with a quarterback coach.
Yeah, no, like I get it. The risk factor is only the injury thing. Like if an injury concern or whatever, getting a chance to see him certainly will whet the appetite, particularly he'll get a chance to go if Justin Fields don't go. So now Trevor Lawrence is playing, the ACC is playing, but the imagination of, okay, Trey Lance, I'm seeing Trey Lance where I haven't seen Justin Fields. And if I don't see Justin Fields, where does my mind go? Does my mind go to the guy that I most recently saw? Or the other thing, while we're here, let's talk about quickly, Ja'Marr Chase opting out. Kind of not quite at the 11th hour, but in a way, almost at the 11th hour because the SEC is playing. What do you think about Chase bypassing this year? And the other thing is, what do you do now? Like, am I working with a wide receiver coach for 6, 7, 8, 9 months? Like, what do I do with my time off?
Well, here's a couple things. First of all, I found out about that the day before. So I don't know. I sent out the tweet and said, there's a big name coming. So that was who it was. People were, I actually felt one of those deals where I don't want to be in the news breaking business, but it was just kind of like a heads up to our followers. Like, hey, something's coming. But then I didn't even realize the fact, stupid on my part. Then it was like Trevor Lawrence is Justin Fields. I'm like, oh great. Nah, man. I guess I should have specified like what conference, cause at least it eliminates those quarterbacks, cause that's where everybody's mind immediately went. But, and look, I the best way, and I think we're on the same page here, Buck, the best way to get better at something is to do it. So if you want to become a better football player, play football. That's going to make you continue to get better, get those reps and get work. The thing that's unique about Ja'Marr Chase has a lot of good tape, a lot of great tape, I should say.
Oh, he's beautiful.
There are a lot of first round corners cashing checks in the National Football League that have seen nothing but the back of his jersey when they've gone up against him. I mean, he has torched all of them. So with him, I can understand that. And again, that comes back to that conversation of, okay, what can happen for you if you go back? I mean, top 10 pick right now. I mean, maybe potentially top 5 pick right now.
Yeah.
You go back to, you just won a national championship. You've got all the tape. Even if I'm Ed Orgeron, I might be like, hey man, you got to do what you got to do. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like it's hard. It'd be hard for me to sell him. I know we work for the National Football League and I want guys to play in college. It makes our job easier. The more tape, the better to evaluate these guys. I couldn't look that kid in his eyes and tell him you need to come back to LSU. He really doesn't.
No, he really doesn't. I just wonder, one, whoever signs him, whoever his representation is, what is the plan? Because it's a lot of lag time between now and the draft. So what is the daily plan? Like, what does he do on the daily basis? Does he work out? What kind of routine do we have him on? All of that, because that is the thing. Like, he is now out of the structured environment that he was at.
You know what's dangerous, Buck, is that you can overtrain and get hurt during this time. This is so much time. If you just go full throttle the whole time, that's not good either. Because, if you think about a college season, once you get into the regular part of the season, not a lot going on during the week, man. No, it's a lot of mental reps.
You got a couple of practices, depending on how they take care of you or whatever. Like, do you simulate those things on a daily basis? Is he going out running routes? Do you have him on a similar game plan? Because at LSU, he's probably working out, 2, maybe 3 times a week when it comes to weights. he is running routes every day as part of his skill development. Well, how do we replicate that part of it now leading up to the combine and all that other stuff? Are you really even getting ready for the combine? Like, what are we planning? What are we planning to do when it comes time to show off our skills? Are we even going to go through that part, or are we just going to be like, "Hey, man, the tape is the tape. You know what it is."
Yeah, I don't know. It's going to be fascinating. I think we'll see more guys faced with the decision. We'll see what they do going forward. All right, let's get to our conversation here. This is a conversation we have with our two buddies, Steve Weich and Jim Trotter. They have a brand new podcast coming out. It's called Huddle and Flow. And before we get to the interview, our conversation with them, let's give everybody a little taste of what this podcast is going to be like.
Welcome to the Huddle and Flow podcast with me, Steve Weich, and my NFL Network colleague, Jim Trotter, where we're all about the NFL, pop culture, the culture, and we're going to have discussions that might make you squirm, but will also make you think.
Yeah, we've got more than 40 years of experience covering the NFL, and what we want to give you here is something that's authentic, that's raw, that's real talk from two black men from historically black colleges viewing the NFL through a different prism. We've got stories, information, context, on and off the field, all things that will show you this is no ordinary podcast.
And Jim, the coronavirus, the pandemic. I mean, this has really changed our lives, everyone's lives in the world, and absolutely in the NFL.
We'll also be joined out of the gate by somebody who can tell us firsthand about all of that and a lot more.
Ahmaud Arbery, Breonna Taylor, George Floyd, so many deaths this summer of unarmed black people. It spilled into the NFL. So on that note, Jim, of all the things you've heard NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell say, where does Black Lives Matter rank?
Right at the top of the list, Steve. To hear the commissioner come out and say that definitely signals what appears to be a new era in the NFL.
But Jim, also, you are a Pro Football Hall of Fame selector. You think you might be able to pull some gold jackets onto the Huddle and Flow podcast?
Steve, you know we will be pulling Hall of Fame guests on our show without question.
This is the Huddle and Flow podcast. And if you don't know, you will know. And if you do know, Jim, you know.
That is fantastic. The Huddle and Flow. How cool is that, man? I couldn't be more excited for this podcast. And Steve, I'll start with you. First of all, awesome trailer, by the way. The thing that stood out to me, and I don't remember if it was you or Jim that said it, but just real. Like, there's no pretense here. This is going to be in your face. This is real stuff, and I love that.
Well, DJ, it is real stuff, and you guys know Jim and I, and, you know, we keep it real. You know, I think one of the reasons – why we are where we are is because we're pretty fearless about what we do. And that's what this podcast is going to be. Now, it's not all going to be 100% serious, and it is going to be football. Okay. So we're going to talk football, but we're also going to talk some of the things that affect football socially, health-wise. I mean, in our debut and in our first episode, we've got two NFL head coaches that are dealing with some significant health issues or have dealt with them. So we're going to talk about all of these things. And what's cool is I send it over to Jim, as you hear in the trailer. Jim and I both went to Howard University. This is the year of Howard University, as is every year, because as Jim will tell you, whenever you meet somebody from Howard, all we do is brag about how great Howard is. But again, and one of the things that's going to be really cool also about this format is Jim and I are going to do justice to the history, the legacy, and the future of HBCUs in the NFL into society because of what they've done for us and what they mean to us and what they've done for the NFL, which typically only gets recognized during Black History Month.
Yeah, you know, DJ and Bucky, some of the best conversations that we have at work are back in the green room, and they're discussions that never make it on the air. And we just wanted an opportunity to have some of those discussions in a public forum and to give fans, I think, a peek behind the curtains of what people are really thinking, how they're feeling, and particularly as it relates to subjects and people that often may feel their voices are marginalized or not heard at all. So from my standpoint, I just want to be sort of a the voice of fans, if you will, and be able to talk about things and ask questions that they want, you know, that they want to hear and they want answered. And I think by doing that, that's what being authentic is. That's what being real is. That's what being, you know, raw with it. And I'm looking forward to it. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. And well, I'm sure we'll go through a few growing pains, but hopefully we get better each week.
And quickly, guys, I want to make this abundantly clear. This is not some knee-jerk reaction by NFL media saying, oh, my God, this has been the summer of social discourse. Let's give two black guys a podcast. Jim and I have been working on this in some form or fashion for a long time.
2 years.
And so, yeah, for 2 years. And so, yes, the timing may seem coincidental, but frankly, I don't care what it seems like because the timing is important. Really, it's important right now.
Yeah, it's funny because you guys are two of my, I guess, most respected mentors, because both of you guys are chiefly responsible for me being able to sit in this seat in some way, shape, or form. First with Jim, when we worked together at Sports Illustrated, and I would call you countlessly to ask for advice on how to write and how to put things together. And then Steve, who actually helped me make my way over to NFL media. And so I'm very excited for both you guys to have the platform. But you talked about 2020 and 2020 being such a unique set of circumstances. You have the pandemic, you have this social discourse. Why are you guys well positioned to now be a voice of reason during this turbulent time?
Jim?
Well, Bucky, I can say this. You know, I think as you get older, you start to ask the question of sort of what's your purpose? And when you're young, you're trying to make your way in the business. You're trying to make your name, all those sorts of things. And for me, it was really back around the time that Colin took a knee that I realized, you know, I'm closer to the finish line than the starting line in my career. And when all is said and done, what do I want to really be remembered for? And I just wanted to follow my passion. And at this point, that was about giving a voice to these players who feel like they're not being heard. And I always tell this story about that Dr. Harry Edwards told me about the conversation he had with Roger Goodell back in 2006 when Roger was elected commissioner and he flew out to the Bay Area to meet with Dr. Edwards to talk about the state of the league. And Dr. Edwards told him that the demographics of the league were changing and that more black players were coming into the league and they were going to become the face of the league. And they were not going to leave their communities behind. And I think that's so important because so many people just view them as football players and they're three-dimensional human beings. And for me, really since 2016 in particular, it's been about following that passion of trying to tell their stories about who they are as people and not just about players.
Steve, I'd love to get to you on this because it seems to me, and we've seen it in the kind of the what's going on practice fields throughout all sports, but really let's just focus on the National Football League. It seems to me this is a more united, you know, players group, players union, whatever you want to call it, than I've ever seen in terms of these guys, no matter color, black, white, you know, it seems like we're all kind of hearing guys come and saying the same things right now. I don't recall a time in league history where we've seen this type of unification. What's your opinion? You guys have got a little bit more gray hair than I do, Steve, so you've been around a little bit longer. What's your take on kind of where we are now versus where we've been historically in that regard?
You are lying so bad because you are going to get an endorsement deal for Just for Men right now. Look, we're seeing these players united in all of these pro sports leagues because I think for the first time, and this is where I think – honestly, the WNBA has been the most fearless in saying, if we lose our jobs, okay, fire us. What are you going to have to play with? Okay, so now the NBA, oh, you want to sit us down like you guys did Colin Kaepernick? Okay, you're going to have to sit down the whole NBA. You're going to have to shut it down. And I think that's where NFL players are starting to realize that if these owners try to, I'm going to put it this way kindly, not hire them, like they did to Colin Kaepernick and some of the other people who staged these protests 4 years, they're going to have to shut the league down. And we've seen people going back to the 60s saying that if athletes of color would ever join forces and unify in their protest, in their resources, it would be a game changer. So that's what I think we're seeing now. And you're going to have an audience say, okay, go ahead and sit out. You won't get paid. if these athletes of color go ahead and sit out, you won't have games to cheer for. You won't be able to have people over to tailgate and to drink your beverages and to woohoo and then dismiss in the streets a little bit later on. So it's just really an intriguing time. And one thing I want to make clear what we're going to do with this podcast is it's not just black. We're going to talk to, we're going to have voices on there that may have contrary ideas, because the back and forth discussion is what Jim and I and everyone I think need to have. One, to educate each other, and the other to empathize and understand one another. And we also want to talk, as Jim mentioned, to marginalized communities. I've got a lot of ties to the Polynesian communities as well. This is a huge factor in the NFL. Tua Tagovailoa is going to be a starting quarterback in the NFL. These are voices we don't hear about. So, again, we're trying to be some messengers, some conduits to the public for a lot of voices that people don't typically hear from. And we just think, again, it's an important time that we envelope everybody involved in the NFL and outside of the NFL. Because, again, we're going to have health officials, entertainers, politicians on here to talk about how the whole world is affecting sports.
And if I could follow up on that, DJ, to your question about unity, I think 4 years ago, these feelings that players are having, particularly black players, are not new. But 4 years ago, when Colin took a knee, they were afraid to demonstrate. And Alexander Madison, the backup running back for the Vikings, told me, he said, back then, you were worried about being fined. You were worried about being disciplined. You were worried about being released. He said, now there is strength in numbers. There's unity. And he said, if you fine one of us, you fine all of us. If you discipline one of us, you discipline all of us. If you release one of us, you release all of us. And that's why I think I'm particularly intrigued to see, for instance, when you have an owner like Jerry Jones, who essentially has threatened players that if you kneel, if you demonstrate during the anthem, you will not play. Well, I think now what we're seeing is that will not only impact the Cowboys, there will be players on other teams who will respond to that as well. And so you have to be careful there. The other thing I would say to you, what's different now too, is Steve mentioned the 1960s, and back then it was black players alone who were speaking out. Now you see more white players. You see in all sports now, and it's not just a national issue now, it's an international issue. We can go around the globe to where we're seeing demonstrations in all sorts of countries. So I think, again, there is that strength in unity, that strength in numbers, that people feel like they're not on an island and that they have support. And so when the Milwaukee Bucks see the Detroit Lions cancel practice, and the next day they decide to cancel a game, and then I start getting calls from NFL players saying, we really want to cancel a game. We want to boycott a game. There is no island in it. It's one giant community, international community, really.
You know, Jim, it's funny. You talk about that, and you talk about, I guess, the uniting of all of these different voices in the locker room. And for so long, politics and religion and so many other things were kind of kept out of the locker room. Well, now we're seeing those things filter not into the locker room, but also onto the field. What do you think about this new world where we are seeing the intermingling of sports and politics play out in real time and in front of everybody for the world to see?
Well, I think it was a lot easier to keep it separated back in the day when there was no social media, when even there was no internet, and teams had greater control of their players. One of the things I know about NFL players, particularly, is that since Morris Smith came in as executive director, he wanted them to see themselves as business people and not just as football players. He wanted them to view themselves as partners with the owners and not just as employees. And I think we're seeing players start to take that to heart, to where, as Roger Goodell said, there is no NFL without black players. And so you are seeing these players start to step up and realize the power in their voice and their actions and the platforms that they have. So I don't think it's a bad thing at all. As you know, as a former player, there are discussions that take place in the locker room that never make the light of day. So I'm sure guys, and I've never been an NFL player, but just having worked in NFL locker rooms, that guys have discussions about some of these things. And the beauty of an NFL locker room, or just a professional athlete's locker room, is that you have people from all different walks of life, different races, different religious backgrounds, different economic backgrounds, all those sorts of things. And yet they all come together for a common purpose. And that's why I think there's so much strength in that. And I think society at large can learn from that.
And guys, look, those conversations were always kept in-house. Like at any workplace before. Yeah. But now we're also seeing, when you talk about politics intermingling with athletics, it seems like every week now a president or political figure is asked a question about athletics. You know, this week I think the president was, or somebody, one of his associates was asked about the NBA players not playing. So, you know, that's all part of it as well. So everything is intermingling. I mean, but of course, everything came to a head when a couple of years ago when the president referred to the NFL players as sons of. Okay, that tore down. It's not building a wall. That tore down a wall in terms of having discussions about politics and ethnic conversations and social conversations. So it's not a one-way street here. And that, again, these are conversations that we hope to have with people a lot smarter than us on the Huddle and Flow podcast.
Oh, that's great. This is, again, for people that are just hearing this and what this discussion is like, trust me when I tell you, these are two of the most connected guys in the National Football League. So not only are you going to hear the great discussions as you're hearing right now, you're going to hear guests, Hall of Fame guests. You're going to have, as I said, coaches coming on early on. You're going to hear from them as well. It's going to be – it's a conversation. I think it's an important conversation. It's a conversation I look forward to hearing from you guys. While we have you, though, I want to get you on some stuff that's going on right now in the National Football League on the field. Let me start with you, Jim. When you look around the league right now and where we are from a COVID standpoint, from a testing standpoint and the low numbers, well, give me like a Jim Trotter optimism reading here. Like, how optimistic are you that we've got a pretty good system in place to be able to work through this season?
You know, DJ, I'm more optimistic than I was at the start of training camp, simply because when you know, the league had set a baseline number for positive tests, and they are so far under that number. And what that says to me is that everyone's taking this seriously, and the discipline that the players are showing in terms of not putting themselves out there in situations that could compromise their health. So from that standpoint, I'm more optimistic than I was at the start of camp. Now, having said that, we haven't gotten to a point yet where teams are traveling, where they're staying in hotels, where they're out and about for a road game, that sort of thing. So the numbers could change. But I have to say, I think the league, the Players Association, and the players have done a tremendous job at this point. Because everyone that I was talking to beforehand, no one thought that the numbers would be as low as they are right now. So that's a major testament to how these players, coaches, and everyone else is taking this seriously.
Discipline, right, Steve? I mean, that to me, this is a sport where you win or lose based on how disciplined you are. And I've been kind of overwhelmed, honestly, with how disciplined everybody has been to keep us where we are at this point.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the key, is the discipline. But I think what's encouraging also, let's give credit to maybe some of the family members and everything of these players, because, you know, usually not all these players are staying in hotels like they typically do in training camp or dorms. These guys are going home. So, I mean, they've sent the message across to their spouses or friends or whomever or relatives who may live with them. Don't bring this stuff in here. And so that to me is why I'm encouraged we're going to get in all 16 games. Now, granted, there may be some outbreaks on some teams, and they may have to postpone a game or two here and there and maybe make it up on a bye week like we saw with the Marlins and the St. Louis Cardinals in Major League Baseball. But I just think that the fact that everyone is kind of understanding – the importance of this, and the fact that nobody really wants to get sick. I think that's a huge, huge element of this. And if we in regular society can continue to do what we're doing to bring these numbers down, I'm actually encouraged, you know, to some degree that we might have some fans in the stadiums by the halfway point of the season, maybe not full capacity, but more than just some of the partial capacities we're seeing at a handful of stadiums to start the season.
You know, Steven, and thinking about the fans, because the X factor is the outside world. Coaches and general manager executives, they can get around the players and tell them to make the right decisions. But what you can't control are the outside factors, the outside world, where people aren't wearing masks, if they are not engaging in behaviors that are appropriate based on what the regulations are. To what level or to what extremes are these teams going to really employ their players to really stay away from the outsiders and to keep it to a position where they can protect not only themselves, but everybody on the team by not making these risky choices and endeavors, particularly when we get to the regular season and the routine goes back to being what they're accustomed to having.
Yeah, they're putting bubbles around every late night chicken wing place in certain markets. No, but what these teams, I mean, first off, is in the restructured CBA, they put discipline. They put disciplinary measures in there if they find players out hanging out at clubs or going to these late night chicken wing places. So, I mean, so there are disciplinary measures.
CWPs, is that what we call them? CWPs?
Yeah.
Exactly, chicken wing places. So you know, players can get fined, suspended, you know, disciplined if they violate something. So that's part of it. But I mean, some of the things that the teams are doing, it's constant reminders. And, you know, and I spoke with Reggie Scott, the LA Rams vice president of sports and medicine before players reported. And he said the main thing is educating them. We know the basics: wash your hands, social distance, wear masks. Then, of course, they've got all these different things in their facilities. But educating them is to where they take all of these practices home. Okay, it's like when we were 16 and we were bus boys at restaurants and we've got to mop up the floor every 30 minutes or wipe tables down. They said, take this stuff at home and your mom's going to be real happy with, you know, the way you're cleaning up after yourself. That's kind of the thinking here with these NFL teams. Go home. Make sure that, you know, everyone's washing. If they go out for, you know, if your kids go out and they're playing in playgrounds or whatever, clean them off before you set them down on the furniture, you know, whatever it takes. And those are the practices now that are really going to have to be pushed. You know, the message is pushed for when players get back into kind of their regular mainstream of living, when training camp breaks, and most of them are breaking this week.
Trot, I want to know if you can join me and Bucky in our pinky promise that we've made to each other. We have pinky swore that we are not going to bail on the Arizona Cardinals. We are both in on the Arizona Cardinals being a playoff team this year. We are buying it because of two things. You win football today, as we always talk about on this podcast, you win with quarterback play and pass rush. That's the way the game's played. It's a quarterback league, and it's can you get to the quarterback? And when I look at Kyler Murray, and Bucky and I have talked about him, we think he's going to win an MVP in the next 2 to 3 years. Like, he's that good. And you've got Chandler Jones and company on that defensive front. I think they're ready to go. So you guys are both welcome to join us on our pinky promise. Right now it's a two-man pinky promise, but we're happy to make it four if you want to join us, Trot.
I like the Cardinals a lot, but I can't join your promise simply because of that division they play in. I can't, look, the 49ers right now are the class of that division. Seattle came within inches, literally within inches of winning that division last year. So I think Arizona is going to make tremendous strides this year, and I think it will be a dangerous club, but I can't pick it to make the playoffs at this point.
All right, you're out. I don't have
a Brian Baldinger pinky, but it's pretty jacked up, so I couldn't do it anyway. But I can't do it. I love Kyler Murray. I'm with you. I think this guy is going to be one of the best players in the NFL for the next 15 years. Okay, but that offensive line is not – I mean, come on. You go out and get, you know, D-Hop.
I'm interrupting you right now, Steve, because we've said this about Seattle. Seattle has had slop in front of Russell Wilson his entire career. But sometimes when you've got David Blaine back there, it doesn't matter what's in front of you. Russell Wilson's been proving that his whole career.
But they can run. They can run the football in Seattle. That's what they do. When push comes to shove, except for when you're on the 1 yard line of the Super Bowl, they can run the football. The Arizona Cardinals have no desire to run the football. They're going to stretch stuff out with Kenyon Drake and do this and that, but I just can't go there. I do think that defense is going to be vastly improved. A lot of speed. Here's a player to look out for, too. And you guys, Devondre Campbell, the stuff I'm hearing about the former Falcons linebacker, they say he has been absolutely fantastic. Defense is going to be better from the jump. Getting Drake Kilpatrick to start opposite Patrick Peterson at that other corner is going to make up for the loss of Robert Alford. Just that offensive line. Come on. You're going up against that 49ers D-line. You are going up against Aaron Donald and Michael Brockers. I don't know what the Seahawks have to offer in that category.
Steve, go watch Texas Tech play. Texas Tech has not produced an offensive lineman in 100 years. And all they do is score 60 points a game in this offense. This is what they're going to do. It's going to be catch, rock, and throw.
Texas Tech. Oh my god! Since you're going there, I'm going to go North Carolina A&T.
I went and scouted a corner. I went and scouted a corner from North Carolina A&T. True story. I went and saw him play. I think it was either Townsend or Morgan, but it was a road game. And Curtis DeLoach is the guy's name. Thank you.
Right.
Remember him? Yes. So I went and scouted him. So I go to the game, and I think it might have been Morgan at the time. And I know I'm pretty sure they have newer facilities now, but at the time there was like no visitor locker room. So I'm not kidding you. So they pulled the bus up, and it was like a yellow school bus. They pulled the bus up right next to the field. So then, like, you know, before the game, they would all trot back in, no pun intended, would all go back into the school bus to have their meeting as a team. And then they go right – they turned the school bus into the visitors' locker room. It was the most ingenious thing I had ever seen. Because I'm sure the other teams just sit on the grass, you know, out there behind the goalposts. DJ, like, nope, we got a portable locker room.
But, DJ, I need your true scouting report on this.
Yeah.
The halftime bands, how was it?
Strong to very strong.
All right. Well, it was a little bit to a halftime at an HBCU game. And you're speaking to someone who came from California who had never been to a black college game before he got to Howard. It's just a different experience. And no words can describe it to you. You just have to experience it. That's all I can say.
Until you hear neck, which is a hybrid version of cameos talking out the side of your neck by any HBCU marching band. And that is a jam that has been appropriated by LSU's marching band and several others. But until you see the HBCUs out there getting down with the majorettes and the drum major.
See, Buck, this
anytime
is
I hear about Ohio State having the best marching band, I'm like, no.
This is Tunnel and Flow. Yeah. This is what we're going to get on this podcast. Right. By the way, we should be invited for a return engagement at some point. I have just to talk HBC like scouting experience. Because I'll give you one more. So I go to this was Morgan for sure. I think the other one might have been at Townsend, but I'm not sure. But I went to Morgan State's pro day, and the coach there at the time was just a super good dude. So normally you go to pro days, if you guys have been there, you have the guys in the graduating class, and then maybe they'll let two or three kids that graduated previously come back, right? Five tops. I show up to this pro day, mind you, this me and this scout from the Washington football team are the only two scouts at the pro day. I'm not, there was 50 guys there. I'm like, this dude looks like he's 45 years old. Here, let that
probably was.
Yeah.
So we get there, they have no vertex, right? So if you watch the combine, you watch guys do the vertical, they have the little tower of little pegs, and you got to jump up and flick them. And that's how we measure your vertical jump. Well, I go the coach, I go, coach, you know, we can set up for everything we need to do. Like, where should we put the vertex? Like, we don't have vertex. I'm like, oh man, what do I got to do? So I actually was like talking with some older scouts, like on the phone, like, hey, I'm at this pro day. I'm like in my first or second year.
Yeah.
How am I supposed to figure out the vertical for these guys with no vertex? Like, oh, you got to get some
on the wall.
Pool chalk. So you get the pool chalk, you chalk their middle finger, you go into the gym, you have them reach up with their hand and make in as high as they can, and then mark that with the pool chalk. Then they have to jump and tap with their, then you measure the difference, and that's how you get it. So Buck, no, but I did not know this. And I had to do this for like 55 guys going through here. So that was my, you can come on and just talk stories. But, on this
DJ worked too hard. You said you went to the gym. All you had to do was get a basketball hoop out and say, who can, like,
you know, I'm not going to lie to you.
That's all you had to do.
It got to the point with some of the guys, there was some of the guys that come up there, like, get ready to jump. And I'd be like, hey, you've been training? Yeah. What's the best you've got in practice? Like, oh, like a 31. All right, good. Jump. Ooh, yep. There you go. 31 and a half. Nice. Okay,
next guy. Yeah. But CPJ, there's a lesson in there too. That's the beauty of HBCUs. We don't focus on what we don't have. We just find a way.
Make it happen.
That's right.
Prepare us for the real world. So.
Nothing but smiles on everybody's faces too. I mean, it was actually a fun memory going through that.
Here's one reason why we're going to have you guys on when it comes to scouting. And this is, we're going to take a turn to a little serious. So almost every HBCU program is not playing this fall, right? Mm-hmm. Only one player from an HBCU got drafted last year. Only one was invited to the combine, and I don't think any were invited to the Senior Bowl. So without anybody, you know, you see that. I mean, that's limited. And now there's no film for a lot of people because HBCUs are one places where guys, you know, one area where guys get much better from sophomore to junior, junior to senior. And so without any of this, it seems like, man, HBCUs are going to be shut out again without the possibility to play. You know, so we got to have you on to see if there's any way to get people to, you know, to the Senior Bowl. I remember last year they tried to have the HBCU Combine, which would be important, but we don't know where COVID's going to be. Yeah. So this is where I think you guys are going to have to put in your creative chalk on the finger scouting stuff and help us out to see how you how these scouts are going to be able to find some talent that normally, you know, is going to be hiding under the rug.
It's a good point. And Buck, we were talking about this earlier, but I mean, you have one of the top basketball recruits in the country that goes to Howard. And I think we're going to see that carry over to football here. I really do. And it's going to hopefully kind of reinvigorate some of these programs who have put so many, you know, great Hall of Fame level players in the National Football League to kind of to get them rolling again. I think that's coming. I actually have some confidence that we're going to see that turnaround.
I hope you're right. I think football is a little different from basketball in terms of the impact that one individual can make. And in terms of the reliance on facilities and television and that sort of thing. So I hope you're right. And even speaking,
if you can play, they find you, Jim. Like if you can play, they're going to find you. That's why, like some of these kids, though, even when you're talking about why I should go to Alabama or whether I should go to Vanderbilt, like come on, man, if you can play, you can play. You're going to find you. Just go where you want to go to school.
Yeah, well, but here's the reason. I'm sorry, Bucky, but here's the reason I have pause on that. DJ, as Steve just mentioned, there was only one HBCU player drafted last year. I think the year before there were only three or four. So you cannot tell me that there was not enough talent there that only one, three or four players deserved to be drafted over the last 2 years in the NFL. I refuse to accept that. So I think that scouts are going to have to be. I think that student athletes take that into account. And that's something that's going to have to be overcome in basketball. Look, there are five players per team on the court. One individual can make a huge difference, especially when we're talking about if you're able to win your conference and get to the tournament and you have eyes and visibility on you there. Football is a little different. So I hope you're right. I think it would be tremendous. It's something that I've talked about for a long time. What would happen if these elite level five-star student athletes, black, decide to go to HBCUs instead of WIs? And if they did, game changer.
They can be any ethnicity, black, white, Polynesian, whatever.
Yeah.
I'm gonna say this about HBCUs and when it comes to it, like coming out and coming up, like typically what happens in a recruiting world, HBCUs won't go after the four and five star players because they don't believe that they have a chance. And so when we think about the guys that go on to the National Football League, typically the higher rated recruits in high school going to college are also the ones that are in the pool when it comes to the NFL. And so HBCUs have to feel like they can legitimately get them. Now, the difference is when other teams are recruiting, they have facilities and money and things that they can throw at recruits to show them this is where we're going. That has been a challenge for some of our HBCUs when it comes to being able to have A1 facilities. And so they have to be able to show them the stories that have made it, the Darius Leonards, the Tariq Cohens, those guys. And it can be done, but I think it's going to be a slow process, but I think it's going to come from families wanting their kids to play in that environment rather than the recruiting and everything else. It's the legacy families that have to be the driving force of that change.
But Buck, I want to hit you on this because you have lived in that 7-on-7 world and seen that the growth in that space. I know and Jim talks about, you know, one player in a basketball team, it's one of five. You make an impact as a team, but man, what if an HBC was able to get with a 7-on-7 team, one, you know, that has a collection of 10 legit big time players and pitch them on saying, hey guys, if you guys all come together, if we can get, you know, these are, you know, 7, 8, 9, 4-star level recruits, and you guys come in as one, not only are we going to win a whole lot of football games, you guys are going to continue to push each other. It's going to be good on good. You're going to make each other better. And then we can, that to me would be like the kickstart. It's not going to be one recruit like you would get in basketball. Right. You would need a collection of guys to kind of band together and say, we're going to do it.
And I would say the team that has the opportunity to legitimately do it, I would say would be someone, and I don't want to be disrespectful to any HBCU, but I would say like a brand name, meaning a name that transcends the world and is more mainstream. So when we talk about Howard and the momentum that Howard has, Howard would have that opportunity. We've seen it in basketball. We have seen their coach, Larry Scott, begin to try and make inroads to be a national recruiting power. Grambling, Southern, those schools, because they play on a national stage with the Bayou Classic, they would have an opportunity. And if they begin to jump up and kickstart and begin to get some of these prominent recruits and win games, because they're going to have to knock off a traditional team, that will be the beginning of it. But look, it's a long road to hoe, but it has to be the families wanting their kids to play there. Coaches continue to recruit those players, and at some point they find a middle ground.
And quickly, you know, Bucky, I think the legacy family part, I'm sorry, Jim, the legacy family part is huge, right? So when I was in high school getting recruited back outside of St. Louis, my mother's always like, well, what about Grambling? You know, because I'm getting led, you know, from, you know, Missouri and Kansas State, places like that. She said, what about Grambling and Southern? I was like, I have not heard from any of them. Okay, so the recruiting budgets, even today, are so small. So even getting in on a 7-on-7 level, if you're in Greensboro, North Carolina, like NC A&T, or if you're in, you know, Jackson, Mississippi, you know, that's, you know, that they don't have the budget. And the way the, you know, a lot of HBCUs appropriate money for their athletics, they appropriate it department-wide. It's hard to earmark funds for a specific sport. For a lot of these HBCUs, so it's a lot of things to overcome. But I'm with you, DJ. If they can get in on some of these 7-on-7 levels, and if coaches could stay at programs long enough to establish relationships with high school coaches, that's another thing that happens. The churn through head coaches at HBCUs is constant. Mm-hmm. So it's very, very hard for them to establish these relationships, to establish pipelines to those universities.
Wow, this has been fun. I kept you guys probably 20 minutes longer than I was supposed to. But, you know, Bucky and I just love hanging out with you. This is what it feels like. Like, this is our kind of green room conversation that we have.
Right.
We're just having it on our podcast, and you guys are going to get the opportunity to have it on yours. It's called Huddle and Flow. It's currently available on Apple Podcasts and on Spotify. Do yourself a favor. Subscribe to this right now. You're going to love it, because these are two of the – not only two of the smarter men that we get a chance to work with, but two of the best dudes as well. So you guys are going to enjoy what they have coming up. That first episode, by the way, I guess I should say, drops September 8th. So you can find it there. Anything, Buck, before we roll out of here?
No, man, I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to you guys having a platform to not only utilize your voices, but to bring other people in so their voices can be heard. So I can't wait. September 8th, I'm going to be all on. I'll make sure I download it.
Appreciate you guys.
It's gonna be hot, that first one.
Yeah, so it will be. We've got two guests. We've got two guests coming on. We're gonna keep it real. And before I go, just paying an homage to a fellow Howardite, the late actor Chadwick Boseman. Wakanda forever. We're all heartbroken over this, and really appreciate you guys having us on to talk about this.
Yeah, let me duck down, Steve. Let me give some love to John Thompson too, another DC legend. Oh.
Absolutely.
He passed away this morning, man. I was at Howard during the time those Georgetown teams were going strong, man. And John was, he was an icon, you know, to see a black man who was unapologetically black in a sporting world that was predominantly white at that level. And the way that he loved on his players, and tough love at times. Those things have an impact on young black men growing up. And I can say, you know, me watching him, just what a special man.
Those are my three favorite teams. I guarantee you guys, I'm the only person on planet Earth that's Bucky knows. I grew up, I was born in Fort Wayne. So I'm a lifelong Indiana basketball fan. But my Indiana was my team, and my two other favorite teams I loved to watch growing up were Georgetown and UNLV. Like those were like, that was must John Thompson, those teams. I mean, that was – I just remember thinking they were so big and so – they had a – felt like an all-NBA center, just one after another after another after another. And then you had AI and all those – I mean, those were fun teams to watch, man.
Yeah, tremendous loss.
Yes, tough loss for sure.
All right. Well, again, 2020 can't get over fast enough, guys. Let's – good news on the horizon here in 2021. Hopefully we can things will improve on a lot of fronts. But I appreciate you guys so much. Best of luck with the new pod.
Appreciate you guys having us.
Well, Buck, it was great to catch up with our buddies there, and excited that they have a new podcast there that everybody can check out again. Huddle and Flow, be on the lookout for that. First episode drops September the 8th. All right, Buck, we're almost done here, but I do want to give everybody a little heads up on the next podcast we release. We're going to have a conversation we have with our other buddy, Mike Mayock, general manager of the Las Vegas Raiders, about what kind of challenges he's had trying to evaluate his own roster as well as rosters around the league. With the rules the way they are right now, and just good to overall catch up with him. I want to give you just a little taste of that conversation right here. And you remember, you can catch the rest of this on our next episode. Here's a little bit of our conversation with Mike Mayock.
You know, Mike, because it's such a different training camp and preseason, abbreviated training camp, no preseason games. How are you guys trying to determine who are the best 53, 55 guys on the team when you're really not able to see them in game-like situations?
And, Buck, I think that's probably the best question in today's environment. And, you know, when you start talking about the generic conversation of what do preseason games really mean for NFL teams, and, you know, do you need four? And what we're feeling right now, and what all the people around the league that I'm talking with are feeling right now, is it's not just about the rookies and the college free agents. It's about some of those first and second year guys that you've tried to develop within your building that haven't had the benefit now of an off season. And you're hoping or about to take a step forward and you can't watch them cover a kickoff or a punt. And I've got this thing in my head. I always call the go, no go syndrome. Some guys are go guys. When you cover a kickoff, there's a certain point where inside you're either going or you're not going.
Yes.
Okay. And we want go guys. And it's harder to figure out go guys unless you're willing to replicate that out in the practice field. And I think one of the things that Coach Gruden has been great with over the last week is just a conversation with me about what do you need to see? Who do you need to see? How can we put them in situations so we can evaluate them better? And I think John and the coaching staff have been awesome just trying to orchestrate situations so we can evaluate.
Just want to give everybody a little taste there, Buck. So everybody's going to enjoy that conversation on the next episode. But anything you want to add here, Buck, before we get out of here? I know we got to do some business here real quick. I almost forgot. Make sure you check out the Hard Knocks podcast hosted by our buddy Peter Schrager. Also, a new episode of Hard Knocks, the TV show, airs every Tuesday at 10 p.m. Eastern on HBO. And I want to remind everybody, inspired by ongoing conversations with players, the NFL has launched the NFL Votes to empower and improve our communities through exercising the right to vote. Join the NFL family by registering to vote today and make your voice heard this November. Visit NFL.com/votes to learn more. Almost forgot, Buck. Almost forgot.
That's all right. Fascinating discussion. A long podcast, but a great podcast. Very, very meaty. I'm just looking forward, DJ. As we're getting down the road, teams are now transitioning more to their regular season practice schedule. We haven't had an opportunity to really see much of what's going on, but the anticipation of the regular season is killing me, man. I'm so excited for this season and see what everything looks like because we haven't been exposed to any preseason games or anything. It's all brand new. It'll be exciting to see it.
No, I cannot wait. It is almost here. And we're going to have all your needs covered right here on Move the Sticks. I want to thank you guys so much for listening. Encourage you to go on Apple Podcasts. If you haven't already, leave us a rating and review. We do appreciate those. We're still taking submissions there. Give us the best high school football player you've ever seen in the review. And we're going to compile those, see if we come up with some interesting tape we can find on a lot of these players. All right, that's going to do it. We'll see you next time right here on Move the Sticks.